Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical. Come get some.
Beware, I IGN Gamescoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined right now by Scott Lowe.
Hello.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Colin Moriarty.
Yep.
And is it fair to say Sony just announced a new console?
I guess so.
Right?
Yeah. Kind of.
Basically a micro console. Mm. Over the night, they held a pre-TGS press conference, mm-hmm. Tokyo Game Show. Colin's going.
Yes, I'll be there.
Are you going this year, Scott?
I am not.
Okay. But you're going in November.
Yeah.
I'm going in December. We're all going to be there.
You're just going for funsies.
Yeah.
We're not going to Tokyo Game Show. We're just
going
to Tokyo.
We're just going to Tokyo.
Yeah.
Anyway, at this conference, they announced the PlayStation Vita TV, which is a micro console. It's about the size of a deck of cards. And it just lets you play Vita games on your TV without a Vita.
With a right? DualShock 3.
With a DualShock 3, and then also streams video like Hulu and Netflix. Is this mm-hmm. accurate?
Yeah, they haven't confirmed Netflix or anything quite yet, but yeah, presumably. Like it's
Hulu's confirmed.
Hulu's confirmed, but yeah, the rest were like Japan-centric mm-hmm. services. But presumably, when it comes to the U.S., if it comes up to the U.S., I mean, it seems...
It will come up.
Yeah, you would imagine like all the standard... All the stuff you see on the PlayStation Network already, I think, is probably fair game.
One detail I missed about this, when is it actually coming out in Japan?
Comes out in the fall in Japan.
So this year.
Yeah, and they don't, you know, this was the one thing they announced where they were very clear that's coming out everywhere. Like, the other things were, you know, very Japanese, and we might not see these things, but that was one thing where they're like, it's coming into Japan first.
Got it.
And isn't it on the PlayStation 4 release date in the U.S.?
Like, it's like in November, like mid-November, yeah.
Yeah, pretty
Which
close.
Is November 15th.
And apparently it's already sold through on Amazon Japan. So,
Being announced like less than 24 hours ago?
The pre-orders, yeah. I just saw it on the website.
And the price in yen is about $100, right?
Yep.
It's like, I think it sounds awesome.
I do, too.
Because the Vita has a really great library of games.
How great? I was giving you a chance to get in here.
Well, I don't have like a quantifier. Like, it's this great.
It's a very underrated library of games. You know, extremely underrated library of games.
Yeah.
And then I could just play all these games on your TV. Like, a lot of people were comments they were being very cynical about it. It's like, that defeats the purpose of a handheld. But whatever, like, games are games. Whether you're playing them on the train or at home.
It is a $100 Vita.
Yeah.
That lets you do a bunch of other stuff. So it's really cool because like they announced the Vita redesign, which Scott Lowe had long prophesized about, and they got rid of the OLED screen, it's lighter, it's thinner, it's going to be mm-hmm. cheaper, it's got built-in memory, although only a gig, but that's enough for your saves and, you know, some little games.
Better than nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And also a new memory card, 64 gig memory card, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Hopefully it doesn't cost like $700.
It will.
Like the other memory cards do. this piece of tech is really cool because it's a Vita that you only have to pay $100 for, and it's already got a great library, and it's going to have access to PlayStation Network. Now, there are a bunch of games that will not be playable on it because of the touch controls, and there is a list of those games in Japan.
Yeah, like, what's an awesome game that won't be playable?
Well, when you think about a game like Uncharted, Uncharted technically, like, you know, so here's the thing. These games can be patched. Like, apparently Soul Sacrifice is going to be patched and a few other games, like internal games, that they don't have to pay the fee to put the patches through cert. And, you know, so they'll hopefully, you know, be able to take care of some of these problems. But yeah, there are certain games, like I really like that game Nun Attack, for instance. That's like all touch. Men's Your Mayhem's all touch. Like,
those, so there's games are also on the App Store.
Though. Yeah, exactly. So there's like other options, and maybe it remains to be seen, maybe you can play it with your Vita. I don't really see the point of that. But
There are companies, it's usually a little bit janky, but like Mad Catz's Android console simulates mouse with thumbsticks and stuff like that. And like, I don't know, they could do something like that, or for a game like Uncharted, yeah, I mean, I would absolutely expect that to just have those touch controls patched out.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting to me is, like, and the whole announcement is very, very confusing. It was like, you know, one more thing kind of announcement at the event, and like it just kind of came in a rush. Maybe like they spent like 5 to 10 minutes on it, and then it was done. But one of the important things to remember here is that, like Colin said, it is a PS Vita in a smaller shell minus the screen and the thumbsticks and all the controls. Like, it's the same interface, you have the same selection of apps, you can pop in a memory card. In fact, there's a $150 bundle that comes with a DualShock 3 and an 8 gig card.
They should sell a screen that you can snap on.
But yeah, so like you can have, and you have a cartridge port. So basically, you know, the way I think about it, why I think it sounds kind of interesting is that, you know, not everyone necessarily wants to buy a dedicated handheld. Like, you know, the market for that is definitely waning because more people are interested in like smartphone gaming or tablet gaming for like on the go stuff. But they may be interested in the games, and for like people who are like particularly rabid trophy hunters, I think something like this is great because they can still get the trophies, they can still try out the games, but then it does all this other stuff too.
I mean, it means that the Vita is not a handheld games platform anymore. It's just a games platform, period, and you choose whether you want to experience it as a handheld or a television platform.
Exactly. Like,
go ahead.
Yeah, I just think it's really cool. Like, my life has changed recently. I used to have a really long train ride, now I don't. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't have, a handheld game console doesn't fit anywhere into my life. Like, I am at work all day, and then I go straight home, and I'm on a bus where I'm standing and all that. Like, I'm not, like, sitting on a train. And then I'm home in my living room. I don't mind. Like, I like playing my 3DS at home. I like playing iPad at home. But, like, this is a totally... How much does this thing cost?
$100.
$100. And so I 100% plan on getting one of these to experience some of these... Vita games. What are some of the best Vita games? I know I was trying to give you an opportunity.
Well, I just didn't want to read down the list. You know,
but like this,
the
Vita game, like,
you know, Persona 4 Golden.
Yeah, Spelunky, Rayman.
Guacamelee.
Guacamelee, Super Stardust Delta. And
Dragon's Crown.
Yeah, Dragon's Crown's awesome. I mean, the Vita really does have it. Like, everyone's always like, you know, I review a lot of Vita games, and they're like, well, is this the game that justifies the purchase of Vita? I'm like, the Vita's been justifiable in terms of purchasing it for a long time. There's a good array of games on there. It's just, I understand people don't want to drop the money on, like you're saying, like a dedicated handheld is waning. Nintendo obviously dominates the space and does a lot better job with that space in terms of giving you, like, we're about to see a really huge influx in 3DS sales with new Pokemon games coming out. There's nothing like that on Vita, but if you're a hardcore gamer that has hardcore sensibilities that likes some of these games, I think it's going to be a good option for you.
I think it's super cool. I don't think there's any reason that... we always talk about the Apple TV and how if they ever get really serious about games on the Apple TV, that then there just won't be this distinction between, oh, this is a handheld game, this is a TV game. Like, the iPad already runs at a higher resolution than HD television, so assuming the game doesn't have like crazy touch shenanigans, you can already just output that to your TV and not have any loss in picture quality. So Sony's kind of, for once, well, they've been ahead of the game before, but they're really, really ahead of the game and ahead of the competition, ahead of the curve on this one.
Okay, so it's basically a micro console, like the Ouya, right, which is already here.
Yeah.
And at the time when it was on Kickstarter, wasn't it like the highest funded video game?
I think it raised over $8 million.
Right.
I think.
Yeah. And then it released earlier this year, but kind of to
no one predicted that.
I know. And then just like the game library isn't there. Yeah. Right. It doesn't have a very compelling game library.
Yeah.
But here, like, Sony comes out. So, like, here's our micro console. It's a $100 Vita. You know, with an incredible game library.
And there's a trump card here, and this is what Scott and I were talking about earlier. We did a brief video on it. Is this thing, you know, you could buy, like Scott said, you could buy a PlayStation 4. And then like three of the PS Vita TVs, and just strew them around your house and different TVs, and then to play the same PlayStation 4 wherever you are, because it facilitates remote streaming of games from your PlayStation 4. So it's just like a conduit. Mm-hmm. So it's a Vita, you can play your PS1 classics on it, you can play PSP games on it, you can play Vita games on it, you can play PS4 games on it. And eventually PS4, PS3 games I'm sure will be available digitally on PS3, whether through Gaikai or just they sell them again. So like this is like really a cool little device.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, just to stress it again, this thing, it really is tiny. Like, I was looking at the ports on the back of it in a picture. Like, it's barely taller than the Ethernet port. Mm-hmm. Like, it is really small.
That's not insignificant. I finally got a new router. I got an Apple router, the little Puck. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have a newfound appreciation for, like, tiny electronics and tiny game consoles. Like, the PS3 Slim versus the PS3 Fat. Like, I don't know. Like, I have room in my apartment for the bigger stuff, too. But just, like... It really does. Maybe it sounds silly, but if this were two or three times as big, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I want that in my entertainment center, but like a little tiny thing, totally. I'll buy it and toss it in there.
Yeah, I think the PS4 remote streaming stuff is probably the reason to be most excited about this. I mean, it's also the reason to be, like, it's also something you should be kind of cautiously optimistic about, because we haven't really seen anything about remote play yet. Like, the promise is that it's going to offer, like, kind of pure unhindered access to your PlayStation 4 library and be able to play anywhere you are. But right now we haven't seen it working, and previous attempts at wireless streaming have not been that great. So with that in mind, and of course I don't expect Sony would be trumping it up this much if they thought that it was going to be a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that said, like, the prospect of being able to, like, say, okay, the wife or the girlfriend or the roommate wants to use the living room TV, my PS4 is in there, mm-hmm. I have to either, you know, go do something else or I can keep playing anywhere else in my house because of this little box. I think that is like a huge opportunity.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I do think, I mean, I would disagree that it's maybe the trump card. Like, I think for me, like, buying a console is a tax that I have to pay to get the games I want to get at. And I don't buy a console until there's enough games on it that I want. You know, I waited to get a 3DS for a long time until there were, it's not like there's some magic formula, but, like, once there's three or four or five or six games that, like, that I really want to play on a console, then I'll jump in and get the console and grab all those games. And so the Vita was never really there. Like, the cost was always too high. I'm like, I want to play Persona, I want to play Uncharted, but not enough to buy the console. $99, like, basically you paid that money to gain access to all these games I didn't have access to before. Like,
but there are reasons to be apprehensive about the value of the Vita element itself. I mean, these games have been designed and run at a resolution below 720p. So, like, scaling that up on a 40-inch television or bigger is probably not going to look that great.
I was actually going to bring that up. For me, I mean, I'm not a big graphics guy. So
yeah.
Again, that's Justin Davis. Maybe not everybody in the world, but for me, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
So I think, you know, there's concern there. I think, you know, obviously the control issue for a lot of games, yes, they can be updated to adopt the DualShock 3, but the DualShock 3 isn't a sufficient, you know, replacement in a lot of cases. I'm not expecting the PS Vita experience to be that amazing. It's also using the PS Vita UI, which is not very conducive for like a non-touch.
It's the bubbles, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because this tells me two things, just two random things. The first is that Sony was never concerned about Vita the way we thought they should be concerned about it because they had these plans probably for a long time, like, we need to figure out a way to get rid of the OLED screen to make these Vitas cheaper. We need to make them cheaper just generally, make them cheaper to manufacture, get them out. It's not like, and PS Vita TV especially, is not something you just like shit out in Andrew House's hand so he can show it at a, you know, this is like something that like has been designed for a long time and like something in the cards for a long time, I think. And the other thing is that, and we've talked about this before, especially Scott on our videos and stuff that we've done, is that, yeah, there is a reason to be skeptical about especially remote play in any respect with PlayStation. Because it was promised with PSP for a long time and it never happened, and then we saw like Shuhei Yoshida playing Killzone 3 on Vita before Vita even came out, and that never really came to fruition. But the Gaikai acquisition for $400 million when Sony was losing over $1 billion a quarter is significant. That tells you everything. Like, they saw something in this technology specifically that would make it that they really think this is going to work, and they wouldn't, like you said, keep talking about it. When we were in New York City in February, at the PS4 reveal, they talked about it and we were very skeptical, right? And I kind of expected they were going to kind of walk it back, but they never have. Like, they insist, like, this is going to work. And eventually, like you said, the vision is to use Gaikai over Wi-Fi so you're not even home. And right. your PlayStation 4 will be on at home and you can be somewhere else with your Vita and play PS4. I mean, that is the ultimate goal, but I mean, that is like years away, probably.
Yeah, and I mean, I just on a, you know, a whim while I was researching an article about this, I like, you know, popped on the Gaikai website and like they are just staffing up like crazy. So this is clearly something that they're investing in a really big way. So
now that Sony has its own microconsole, what's the future of stuff like Ouya and GameStick?
Yeah, I mean, I do think we'll see what streaming partners they come out with, but forget games entirely. You'll have a $99 box that'll presumably be able to stream, you know, hopefully Netflix, hopefully Amazon, hopefully Hulu. Like, there's whole companies that have built up their entire company on building boxes like that, like Roku. Like,
yeah. I mean, Roku is, like, almost $100, right?
And people really like it, and it's a good product. Like, that's a totally good, well-built, you know, kind of sexy product. And I think that this, if you're even remotely interested in games, absolutely trumps that.
Yeah, and I think the thing to keep in mind is people isolate, like, specific features, and, like, why would I ever want to play Vita on a TV? You have to think about the sum of its parts, right? Like, you know, like, all of it together makes each element all that more interesting. Like, you know, the Vita stuff wouldn't be as much of a value if you didn't have the potential for PS4 streaming or media. Like, just buying a dedicated box just for that would just seem a little bit unusual or not worth it to some people. But all together, I feel like it's a really compelling box. And then as far as, like, for stuff like GameStick and Ouya, I think you have to keep in mind that their the Android advancements are growing rapidly, and that these platforms are becoming more and more extensive in terms of their own independent libraries. So you look at stuff like Dead Trigger 2, it looks incredible. Yep. Like, the independent, like, kind of standalone games on Android are much more interesting than they ever have been before.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing, you know, mobile iOS and Android sort of stretch upward. We see stuff like, you know, Real Racing and really triple A games from EA and other companies. You know, the new Call of Duty game that came out looks really gorgeous. The game's so-so, but, like, the production values on it are very, very high. And then now we're finally seeing, it took them several years, but we're seeing the console manufacturers figure out how to stretch themselves downward and really be like, you know, 99 cent apps, $2, $3 games. Like, they did that on Vita with stuff like Nunatak, but not that really many people owned Vitas. And so now they have a device that's far cheaper than anything Apple is releasing. So it's like, if you have a kid that, you know, really loves Angry Birds or, you know, whatever, he loves whatever he loves, you can either get him an iPad mini for, you know, or a Touch for $200, or this is half that price. Like, I'm glad to see that it's not just the mobile players trying to scale up in terms of the AAA games that they're offering, but the console manufacturers sort of bring their business down and try to have more breadth than they've had in the past.
And the game doesn't change for Ouya or GameStick. They all had like their own challenges in the form of Apple and Google. Like both of them are rumored to be expanding into the living room with their own set-top box devices for gaming. And then you look at companies like Amazon, who have like started their own game developer so that they can continue, they can make Android games and boost their own platforms. I think you know, Android, you know, as a whole, as a concept, as like an open source games platform, is something to watch carefully. And I think Sony would be very smart to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, in terms of Ouya, specifically how the PS Vita TV might affect Ouya, it's, you know, like the proposition of Ouya in terms of a company that thought it could make hardware with $20 million of combined venture capital Kickstarter money was absurd from the get-go, and it was never going to work. So, like, they got the boxes out, and the game, and it's failing. Like that, and you can't make them, and you can't have R&D and manufacture and sustain a device like that for $20 million. You can't do it. It's not going to happen. So, like, Ouya is going to die. It doesn't matter if PS Vita TV is great and does anything or doesn't. Like that market is set. Like, it's not going to happen. So, like, and you know, so I agree. Like the biggest things with, you know, with Apple and Google coming out and Amazon kind of getting, that's you know, a harbinger of things to come for Ouya. But obviously, like, Ouya could be by itself, and it still doesn't have the pertinent money and the sales necessary. Like a story you wrote not too long ago about how, like, game sales, where the highest grossing game is making like $20,000. Like, you can't, that's not an ecosystem that's going to work. So I think PS Vita TV and Ouya are two different things in the sense that, like, Sony has the capital to back this device up, and Ouya doesn't.
I do think, I like my Ouya. I feel like I'm the only person that does. I keep meaning to find the time to write about the things I enjoy about it. It's, you know, a tiny, I like the way the console looks. Again, I don't mind having it in my entertainment center. I like, you know, having access to Android on my TV. So I'm not really anti-Ouya at all, but in terms of the value of, like, if you have these $200 boxes side by side each other and you're a gamer, like, which one should you get? Like, I feel like if the PS Vita TV works the way that it's supposed to work, and again, that is like a big if, like, we'll wait and see if it comes out and actually delivers, but, you know, if it does what Sony says it does, I feel like it's a much better $99 box to buy.
Well, and then the other thing to consider, as Colin mentioned in the beginning, was the new cheaper PS Vita. Like, I think that is going to propel the platform more than, say, the PS Vita TV as far as, like, you know, getting developers on board and consumers on board. It's actually kind of like a two-prong attack, really. Like, lowering the cost of the Vita, getting it in more hands, getting developers more interested because the install base is growing. I think that will make something like the PS Vita TV all the more alluring, in addition to just the existing library.
So. Are they replacing, does that new Vita model replace the old one, or are they still going to have OLED screen?
They haven't said, but I would be very surprised if the current model stuck around. I mean, unless they're planning on making it like the premium version.
Like people, like the OLED screen was supposed to be a big selling point of it, right? Yeah. Like,
I never was that impressed with it.
I mean, it's gorgeous, it's like state-of-the-art tech, but it, you know, as far as like the gaming experience, for me, like the OLED is totally invalidated by the subpar resolution of the display. Like, right, you know, like, yes, it's gorgeous, yes, it's clean, but my iPhone's high resolution looks way better.
Yeah.
I think that's the bigger selling point. I think that's where they have the biggest point to improve upon. But yeah, the LCD, I mean, and we also haven't seen how the new LCD is. Like, some LCDs are really great. Sometimes they're not.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's hopefully Sony is savvy enough to understand that even though they're swapping in, you know, a lower, I don't want to say lower quality, but you know, the display tech isn't as advanced. Hopefully they're still sourcing, you know, LCD screens that are, you know, really
pretty solid,
attractive.
Yeah. And I mean, again, all of this is like, we don't know anything about North America for any of these products. Yeah. Like, we have no sense of whether PS Vita is coming, you know, this year or next, or if the price will be the same or less. You know, these things are all kind of up in the air, but I think that's what TGS is going to be all about.
In other news, did you guys know today is the 14th anniversary of the Dreamcast?
I did.
Oh, yeah.
$9.99.
It's big. I remember that day. I remember that day well. I remember the VMAs. the video game awards on MTV. Yeah, they $9.99 commercials everywhere, and God, I love the Dreamcast so much. The Dreamcast was a great console, ahead of its time.
Yeah.
PS2, the very fact that PS2 existed killed the Dreamcast. Like, it was on the horizon, and no one even had hands-on or knew anything about it, but the fact that it was just there and Sony announced it killed the Dreamcast. There's nothing really like that in the history of our industry, where people were so hell-bent on waiting for this thing that they were just like, whatever, I don't want the Dreamcast.
There's a little bit more to it than just the PS2. There's the fact that the Sega Saturn was a disaster, and so if people are going out to buy a console, they're like, I don't know about this Dreamcast. There was no EA Sports on Dreamcast. Like, it's not just the looming threat of the PS2.
I think the PS2 is half the battle with the Dreamcast, and I think most of the other half of the battle is the rampant piracy issue that caused software sales to dwindle. Because it was just you could just use a burned CD. You didn't have to, like PlayStation, you had to play with it to like get it to play burned games, right? You had to like get the spring to put in to like press the button down. You had to get a black disc to spin and start the SCA logo, then pull it out, then put the disc back in. Yeah. There was like a bunch of stuff you had to do to massage a PlayStation with Dreamcast. And what were they called? Bleemcast or something like that? Remember that?
Yeah, Bleem.
Yeah, like the whole, like it was just, they messed up.
That Phantasy Star Online though.
Yeah, the first console game I ever played online regularly was NBA 2K,
yeah.
Which was awesome. And you had to buy the Dreamcast keyboard, you had a friggin' phone cord stuck in your Dreamcast. It was, yeah, the Dreamcast was a special console.
You know what I think killed the Dreamcast?
What?
C-Man.
Wait. Yeah, man, C-Man was something else.
We can do C-Man and Blue Stinger.
Blue Stinger.
We could do a whole other show on Dreamcast.
We should.
Maybe we should. But stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to GameScoop. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Justin Davis,
hello.
Brian Altano, and Colin Moriarty.
This is fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Oh, you really? Get rid of it so I can pay attention.
There you go.
We're talking about the best third-party publishers, so everyone besides Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft.
Yep.
The guys that, bring us most of our games. Mm. Which are the best ones? Let's start with some numbers here. Let's start with maybe the most controversial, Electronic Arts. Mm.
They were the head for what you looked up Metacritic numbers.
Yeah, right? So like in the past year, they're like the best reviewed publisher of their games.
Sure.
In their whatever 30-year history, their average game review is 72, which is good.
Yeah.
So like, they make pretty good games. But like people love to hate on Electronic Arts, right? Their highest rated game ever is Mass Effect 2. Now they have all of PopCap games, so like that's really good in their library. They brought us Rock Band, Burnout, Need for Speed, and then upcoming they've got Battlefield 4, Peggle 2, and Titanfall. Probably everybody's most anticipated next-gen game. So they're a pretty solid publisher.
Yeah, I mean, I would say EA is probably my answer. I think people love to hate on EA, but they hate on like specific parts of it, and they ignore. They're like, well, the SSX games used to be awesome, and I liked that they published Rock Band, and I liked all the Peggle stuff, but screw EA. And like those sorts of people, I'm kind of like, well, they're a big company that does a lot of really, really good stuff and maybe some stuff you don't agree with.
Right, that's the thing. Like, I mean, they're rarely defined by their body of work. It's more so a few loud, bad decisions they make every now and then.
Yeah, like, I mean, there are genuine complaints about buying studios and then shutting them down and making them do things that, making that studio work on things they didn't like. And I'm not discounting any of that. But I'm just saying I would never ever boycott a company like that because they put out too much good stuff.
They got the brunt of the hatred for a lot of the microtransaction stuff that happened in the last few years.
Mass Effect 3 ending.
Yeah, and all that was
and
all
the
their
Sim
fault.
City always online connection. But like,
yeah.
Like those are they made some poor decisions, but I think their library is pretty solid.
And they also did away with the online passes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. EA is good. I mean, I like EA Sports a lot. I play Madden every year and the NHL games every year. And I understand people's complaints about those games in terms of their kind of just roster updates. And I think a lot of people don't sympathize with these studios that make these games, like EA Canada making NHL. Like, when you have to ship a game in 10 months, you don't have time to, like, get into the nitty-gritty of the engine and change everything. You have to focus on, like, three things or whatever that you want to change, right? Two or three things. And so I actually give them credit for focusing on, especially with EA Canada, because I'm really familiar with the NHL games, focusing on things that bring incremental changes to these series, whatever. I just wish that they maybe priced them more affordably and made these games more platforms, like the NHL platform or the Madden platform, where you pay for your roster update, you pay for these updates and stuff like that. But I like EA Sports. And like you said, PopCap, like Plants vs. Zombies 2 is so good. And And people also forget that these, you know, these are this the same studio that does take chances on things like Mirror's Edge or,
Bringing us Mirror's Edge 2.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, people will hate on a company like Electronic Arts in one breath, and then be so happy that Mirror's Edge 2 got greenlit in the next breath. And I'm like, well, that's the same publisher.
Yeah,
you know?
I will say that some of the hatred in regards to the annualizing of franchises and stuff like that, and especially the sports thing, like, you won't see a lot of innovation in their sports games, not only because they're on a crunch, but also because they did monopolize that whole side of the game there.
Yeah.
I mean, there are no other people that can make NFL games.
Yeah, that specific thing with in terms of the NFL monopoly is one thing that I am upset about, because people do remember like Sega's like 2K5 football, football game as being like the best. It really isn't, but like that's like the touchstone for people when they want to complain about their sports offerings, which I agree with. I wish that there was more competition. It would drive them to do more. You see a lot of that with Sony's baseball offering from Sony San Diego every year, and they have to compete directly with MLB 2K. You see a lot more competition in that field. Now that EA is bringing back the NBA series, hopefully we see more competition with NBA 2K.
Yep.
So I think competition is kind of half the problem, and it's not EA's fault that they dominate the field. Because if I owned a business and I can say, like, we're the only ones that can make NFL games, I'd be like, of course we would do that. I mean, that makes perfect sense. These games sell millions of copies a year. EA is smart.
Hey, you mentioned 2K. Next week they publish the most anticipated game of the year, right? GTA 5.
Yeah.
This is also the publisher that brings us BioShock, Borderlands 2, Civilization, and they published Oblivion.
Yeah, they had a good year.
Right. Yeah. So that's a pretty strong portfolio.
Yeah.
For years, 2K was like, they had GTA, had GTA, and that was it. And now they finally sort of cracked the code, or maybe they just happened to get lucky or skillfully steered themselves towards building up a few other big franchises. But now I would definitely say that they've managed to elevate themselves into, you know, a higher tier.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, their franchises are weird, though, right? Like, I mean, you're not going to get a BioShock every year. You're not going to get a Borderlands every year. You're not going to get a GTA every year. These aren't the sort of, like, I mean, EA has their thing figured out in terms of that. But 2K, I mean, 2K could have a horrible year next year.
Yeah, for sure.
What about Japanese publishers? Capcom, Square Enix.
Speaking of horrible years next year.
Sega, Konami. I mean,
so Capcom's in trouble, and Konami is probably in trouble too. And what's ironic about those companies is that they are not only iconic old school video game publishers and with internal developers, really talented internal developers, but they own great franchises. Like Capcom owns Mega Man, right? Like Capcom owns Street Fighter.
Resident Evil.
Yeah. That was maybe what I would have gone to before Mega Man.
But they still own it.
I think Mega Man has more cachet now than Resident Evil, as that series kind of becomes whatever the hell it's become in the last two games.
Yeah.
And they've seen, they suffer from the same problem that Square Enix suffers from in terms of spending too much money on games, having too lofty of goals in terms of games being sold. For instance, Resident Evil 6 sold 5 million copies, which would be a huge success even for a first party developer. That was about 2 million off of their estimation, which is sad. That they thought these games were going to do
sad.
Better.
It's terrifying that we live in a world where you can sell 5 million copies of a game and it's a disappointment. I mean, what does that bode for next gen, where there won't be that type of install bases within the first few months, if not year?
I mean, I think when I think about who were sort of the premier third party developers, not very many Japanese ones come to mind. But I was also surprised about, like, I feel like there used to be a few companies that were like really easy to hate on, and I feel like they've mostly just gone away. Like Ubisoft 2K stuff, I'm like, I like all their stuff. Mm-hmm. I like EA's lineup. I like Ubisoft's lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Square Enix has really, you know, gotten Eidos in order, and Tomb Raider was really good.
Zynga.
That's very true. I just mean, like, there's not many, like, sort of top-tier third-party developers that I think are doing, you know, consistently bad work or work that I'm not excited about.
Yeah, I mean, the Capcom and Konami thing is strange. To me, they were always the quintessential third parties. When you thought third parties, they were the names that were synonymous. Like, I mean, some of the franchises you just rattled off, like, define third-party games to me.
Yeah, think about Konami with, you know, Metal Gear Solid, which is basically the only AAA thing that they do anymore. And they have Castlevania, which I think Lords of Shadow is actually a really great game on console. I wasn't fond of the 3DS game at all, but that's a game where, that's a series that can come back at some point, but, you know, they need to readjust, you know, their expectations as well. Mm-hmm. And plus they have, you know, Pro Evolution Soccer, which competes with FIFA very fruitlessly, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
So these things are problems. Square Enix is an interesting company. They're really, it's a tale of two problems with them, or one problem and one good thing. And the problem is their internal developers. The good thing is that they very fortuitously went out and purchased Western developers that are keeping them afloat. So when you think about things like they publish like Deus Ex, mm-hmm. or Tomb Raider, like Justin said, mm-hmm. like these are offsetting, you know, losses and underwhelming sales for things like the Final Fantasy 13 series. And obviously Final Fantasy 14 was a disaster for a little while, although that's...
I honestly think the running theme with a lot of these third-party games you've listed, especially that have a really good lineage, is that they have completely lost any brand identity. Like, Resident Evil doesn't know what it wants to be anymore. Castlevania doesn't know what it wants to be anymore. Final Fantasy doesn't know what it wants to be anymore.
What does it mean to be a Final Fantasy game?
Right.
Now?
I mean, Resident Evil 6 was half survival horror, half Call of Duty, and you're going to piss off half the people playing that game, and they did.
Yeah.
So you're splintering off your fan bases doing that.
Konami's one of the lowest rated publishers. Average game review is 65.
Ooh.
Highest rated game ever was Metal Gear Solid 2. And they still have, I guess next year they've got Metal Gear Solid 5 and Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 that are coming.
Yeah, so and also do, you know, especially Metal Gear.
Those should do well, yeah. Metal Gear.
Do you think it's telling that we've had a whole conversation about third parties without even mentioning Activision?
Or just, we just haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a plan. I have a plan.
He's got a plan.
Before we move back to the West, though, you did touch on it, like Atlus, I think, is in terms of quality, probably the best third party publisher in Japan. And it's ironic that they're in trouble financially, but they're really not. Index, which is their parent company, is in a lot of trouble. The rumors are that Sega might buy Atlus, which would be a really huge problem for hardcore gamers, considering the angle that Sega's been taking lately.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Like, what is Sega today? Like, what do they have? I mean, you know, they've got big franchises like Sonic, you know, House of the Dead and stuff like that. But, like, looking at their upcoming games, I don't even know. They have a game called Sonic Lost World coming to Wii U. That's it that I know of.
Yeah, that's being sent to die.
It is. And it looks great, which is a shame.
But it's that usual Sonic hype cycle. It looks great, but then we'll learn more and then say,
So well, honestly, that's actually died down a little bit the last few years, too, because the last Sonic Generations was great, and so was Sonic Colors. Sure. So that's two, and that's coming from somebody who actually didn't really like Sonic growing up. All my friends were like, Sonic's better than Mario. And even later, the revisionist historian in me went back to play it, and I was like, Sonic sucks.
Yeah, can you get some of that crack that your friends were smoking when
yeah,
you were a kid?
Yeah, exactly. Kid crack. There's that, but I mean, they're also experimenting more in the mobile space than I think some of the other companies are, so they might be offsetting something there with, hey, buy 99 rings
talking about
for a dollar.
Sega. Yeah, and they also have like a big like amusement, like arcade business.
Yeah.
Same. And, like, casino. Yeah, they've got that too.
So, yeah, Sammy's
in Japan.
Uncle Sammy.
Yeah, Uncle Sammy.
Yeah, I mean, wants you to play some video games.
Sammy, I think, is doing really well for them in Japan, and like their financials are improving. But that's a company that doesn't take huge risks. Like that Yakuza game was announced for PlayStation 4.
Wait, Sammy doesn't take.
Sammy's
the riskiest motherfucker in the world. Sammy's like, we're making a snowboarding arcade game. Yeah. It's 10 feet wide, and it costs $2,000 to make. We're gonna put it in a pizza shop in Japan.
Well, what I was gonna say was that it's like Sega probably won't bring that Yakuza game over. They're not gonna bring Phantasy Star Online over for Vita.
Yeah.
That new Phantasy Star single player game, they're probably not gonna bring over. So they're a very focused company now. They are a shadow of their former selves. Obviously, they have been for a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know. Just looking at something like Sonic realistically, like Sonic was really never very good. I mean, like,
I agree with you.
And like, I agree with Altano in the sense that, like, when you know, I grew up with a Nintendo and Super Nintendo, and I was all about Mario and I loved it. And my friends, you know, so my friends had Genesis, and you play Sonic or Sonic 2, you're like, Jesus.
Yeah,
like, it looks really nice, but like, it doesn't play well. Like, you know, Super Mario World, especially, and Super Mario 3 are like the pinnacle of gameplay, and you're gonna put something like Sonic next to that and pretend like they're the same? I don't know about
that. That's for a separate day. I can talk about this with you all day long.
I know. Coming back to the West, Bethesda.
Yeah, Bethesda's super strong. I mean, they're a tale of two publishers, too, where like they have like weird, crappy games that, you know, like The Hunted, right? Was that mm-hmm. that weird like that.
Yeah, how do you remember that?
And then, because I went to an event and played it once.
Okay.
And then they have like games that don't kill, like Splash Damage's game, Brink. They published that.
They've got Dishonored.
Yeah.
Like, that's the difference between their publishing record and their development record. Like, the stuff that's done by Bethesda Game Studios is, you know, they'll take the time and the money to ensure that that game is a massive hit and a massive, you know, quality, you know, effect, you know, great game as well. So, but the stuff that they publish is they've definitely made some bad bets there.
Yeah, they published. What was that weird, like, pulpy action game that they published?
Wet?
Wet. That was the one I was thinking about. Yeah. Like, yeah, they do publish, like,
okay,
just bizarre stuff.
But, yeah, strange choices.
Yeah.
Games like that, it's hard for games like that to exist anymore. They're just too expensive to make.
Upcoming, they have Elder Scrolls Online and Evil Within, which, I don't know.
They're publishing that.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Huh.
Hopefully we'll hear more about Fallout 4 at some point, too. I assume their internal studio is inevitably working on that.
Got it.
Yeah.
is Warner Brothers. We've got the Batman games. Then all the Lego games.
Yeah, the Lego games.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And they do a bunch of kid stuff, too. Yeah. It's like, these are the sorts of...
I love the Lego games.
Well, no, but really I'm not even talking about that kid stuff, but like other, like they do like, you know, 3DS, like kids
they've also
games.
Got, yeah, they've also got The Witcher, and then they've got Dying Light and Mad Max. Oh. So there's like,
weird.
They focus.
Hardcore stuff that they're working
on. It's a good mix of stuff there.
They've definitely come on strong. I remember distinctly several years ago, Warner Brothers had a booth at E3 and could not get anyone to pay attention to their Batman game. Look, you guys, we got this Batman
Arkham
game coming out.
Asylum?
Yeah, it was like E3, so you know, whatever year. Yeah. Like the year before that game came out, no one
gave
a shit.
Oh, and you know what was sitting 3 feet from that on the world's tiniest kiosk was Scribblenauts.
Oh, yeah.
And people were like, what the hell is this? And we all played it. I worked at GameSpy at the time. We gave it Game of the Show. Yeah. Now it's a franchise.
Yeah.
They've got Batman characters in it and all Unmasked. DC characters and stuff like that. Yeah.
So that's what, like, Mad Max looks so-so. Some of their stuff looks so-so. But, like, big picture, they're definitely a third publisher that's come on very strong over this console generation.
I agree. And then ranked kind of low are both Ubisoft and Activision. Average game rating 66 for both of those.
Ubisoft's a little misleading because they have like Imagine Babies and all that stuff that I'm assuming.
That's true. They've stopped that stuff.
Yeah, they pumped the brakes on
that. The Nintendo DS cash cow is like out.
But I mean, I think
they did the Pets series.
Yeah,
Babies.
That was what was up
Z,
though. That was hot on the streets at one point.
I'm sure that if they could find a way to keep doing that kind of stuff on 3DS and Vita, they would.
Yeah.
There probably just isn't the same market for that kind of stuff.
I think things changed. But I think what they're doing now, they do
Just Dance and all that other stuff.
Yeah. They do. Far Cry 3 was awesome.
Far Cry 3 was awesome. That was really one of the great games, I think, of last year.
And then they'll do sort of adventurous stuff like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon. That's cool.
I mean, a publisher of that nature putting out the two Rayman games that they put out.
Yep.
I mean,
That's
not really the biggest brand in the world, and visually it's kind of like, wow, what am I looking at here? But I mean, they took a risk with those games. They both reviewed very well. So
they have one of the most anticipated next-gen launch games with Watch Dogs.
Yeah, and then Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I think Ubisoft is maybe the last of that. I mean, I consider the big three.
Splinter Cell.
Exactly. I consider the big three Ubisoft, EA, and Activision. Yeah. And they're by far the most willing to take a risk of the three.
But they're also coming on hot recently, too, in the last few years, which I think is cool. Like, Ubisoft has grown in terms of stature.
Yeah.
Maybe not in terms of money made. I don't know anything about their financials, but like, I'm not an Assassin's Creed fan at all, but like, there's no denying that I'm in the minority on that. Like, that series just murders. Like, they're trying to annualize that and do their thing. They just announced a bunch of really great games. The World War One game that looks
all
really
of the
cool.
stuff running on the Ubi art engine is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, to see that from a publisher of that magnitude,
I mean, stuff
is
like Rayman,
really cool.
Just a 2D platformer, an open world game that's not based on a big franchise. Yeah. You know, they take.
They're also they've got South Park now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and they even have some stuff in the hat that like they can pull it at any time. It's like they go, hey, Prince of Persia, we have that.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
There it is.
That'll come back eventually.
Yeah,
for sure.
Beyond Good and Evil. Yeah. Want one of those? Sure, we're working on it. You know.
What about Activision?
Activision is the smartest publisher in the market. I mean, like, there's no doubt about that. You know, like, they dwarf everyone else. And I feel like they make interesting decisions. Now, like, whether they're going to let...
Activision Blizzard now.
Yeah, like, exactly. Right. And, like, whether or not they're going to, like, let their, you know, foot off the pedal at the right time with something like Call of Duty remains to be seen.
Absolutely
they might,
not.
They might run that into the ground. But even if they run into the ground, even if Call of Duty falls and does 10 million units sold,
it still makes a ton of money for them.
Like it's they're shrewd. Like, they're much more shrewd than people give them credit for, especially with the Vivendi spin-out and, you know, people kind of... You know, taking parts of that company now, including Bobby Kotick, which owns part of that company himself now through a venture capital firm that he created. Like, there's a little more fluidity there now with Activision. I think that they're going to surprise people with maybe some of the things they have in the future, but I don't know if that's true.
I think being
shrewd
is just about the only thing that people give Activision credit for. I don't have a tremendous amount of respect for that company creatively. I think they had Tony Hawk, an awesome franchise.
Tony Hawk 2 is their best reviewed game.
Ran it into the ground by releasing one every single year. They had Guitar Hero, awesome franchise, ran it into the ground by releasing one every single year. And people are like, oh, they're so stupid. Why don't they rest those franchises for a year? And it's not that they're stupid. It's that they didn't give a shit.
To be fair,
like,
we're
going to make as much money as we can right now, and we do not care if that's not a business for us.
I agree.
10 years
I actually think that creativity was the downfall of some of those franchises. Somewhere at some point, somebody was like, let's not play it safe. Let's come out with a Tony Hawk that comes with a skateboard.
Well, they didn't have
that
a choice.
That was a creative decision.
They come out with one every single year.
I know,
there
and actually,
nothing
the,
left.
The few before that were really bad, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just like some of the Underground and Downhill Jam and all the other.
I liked 4 a lot.
They really took that franchise. I mean, we don't even think about it anymore. But they took that into a thing that no one even wants to remember anymore. I don't think they'll ever.
And
bring
we don't
it back.
Now like Call of Duty just had its 10th year anniversary. 10 years ago did not exist, and we've had 10 games in 10 years. Like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when people are like, no, it's going to be on top forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about the math. Like, I agree with what you said in terms of, like, they do look long term. They know what's going on, but they look at it in terms of, you know, we could rest Call of Duty and sustain these studios that make them, like Sledgehammer, for a few more years and let them take their time in the game. But monetarily, that's not going to work out for them. It works out for them if they just rush the game in 2 years and get it out. And they've co-opted these different studios that they've acquired to make them all work on Call of Duty because that's what makes most sense for them. Now, like, they own Raven, which is arguably like one of the most creative and probably one of the best shooter
Raven's
studios
great.
In the entire industry. And like, Raven's all they
incredible.
Do is make multiplayer maps now.
Which one do they do?
They did Singularity and the old Wolfenstein games. Yeah. They were founded in Wisconsin specifically to work with it at the time. Like, they have like great shooter pedigree. You know, they have Neversoft. We were talking about Tony Hawk. Now they're a shooter studio. Like, everything's kind of changed there. I think that they're big enough and have enough money and like we said, are shrewd enough to kind of pivot when the market calls for it. And I kind of wonder if you can really, you know, like, economically hate on a company that like was so financially stable that their parent company was taking all of the money that they were making to pay off their loans.
Yeah.
Like Activision is like super strong. Now, whether or not they collapse because they do to Call of Duty what they did to Guitar Hero remains to be seen, but I say they did that to Guitar Hero knowing they were going to do that to Guitar Hero.
I mean, I think
and when
right.
the game crashed, when that series crashed, we're like, well, we made a bunch of money. We didn't really lose anything, so
but
it doesn't
matter.
That's
why I want to separate, like, you know, giving someone props creatively and for the work that they do and giving them props for having good business sense.
Sure.
And that's what I mean by Activision. Like, I'm not interested in Call of Duty. I'm not interested in, not Disney Infinite, in Skylanders.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have $3 billion franchises, and all three, I think, are very meh-worthy at this point. And they have potential to be, like, I'm not an analyst. I don't know whether Disney Infinity is going to eat Skylanders lunch. I think all three of those businesses could be in trouble. World of Warcraft, Call of Duty, Skylanders.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that you have to separate these two things, creativity from the economic realities being a publisher, but being a publisher inherently and owning studios internally means that, like, it's not so much about the creativity as much as it is about the economic output.
Of course
output
not. I can't play Bobby Kotick's Eighth House.
No, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, if you have an independent developer that goes to a publisher, think about something like think about Obsidian or something. Like, they went to Bethesda specifically to make New Vegas,
yeah,
right? Like,
sure.
This is a creative studio, and we know that Raven or Neversoft has the same creative vision, but
yeah,
they just don't have
the
freedom, and so, like, you kind of have to judge them more as an umbrella than anything else because they don't have that same creative.
Let me ask this: What do the Call of Duty Ghost pre-orders look like right now?
They're really bad.
Are they really bad?
A little bit misleading because there's next-gen consoles coming out, and so that depresses pre-orders because people are waiting to see what direction they.
Yeah,
go
because I mean, the only way for that message to ever get across that we are, and I feel the same way as you. I'm fatigued on a lot of these series. But it's just like you said, like Warcraft. If they lose 3 million players, they still have 10, 12 million players, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only way to really say we don't want this anymore is to not buy it every year. And people keep buying it every year. Which...
I mean, I guess the main thing that I want to communicate is I feel like Electronic Arts, I'm going to go back to what we opened the show with, I feel like they get a lot of hate. And when you compare them as like a mega publisher to like an Activision as a mega publisher, as a gamer,
it looks like
a shareholder, like you get crazy stuff like Mirror's Edge 2 from you know, EA, like Activision is not a company that does that sort of thing.
Yeah, what's the biggest risk that they've taken?
Well, they did take some risk, like Prototype
and they've got Destiny coming out.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So they do
Destiny.
Have a big next-gen original series coming
out.
Yeah.
Not a huge risk because of the pedigree of the developer behind them.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, I didn't like Prototype.
Prototype was a risk, you're right.
Yeah, but it was, and Prototype was like the poor man's Infamous, so that game was like totally never going to succeed at all. But what's interesting about that studio is even after they made Prototype 2, like, they were immediately shut down, and they probably weren't losing money, but that's Activision saying, like, we anticipate that you're going to lose money eventually, so we're shutting you down.
Yeah,
they just run themselves a little bit differently. I don't have a lot of respect for, like you said, creativity, like the creativity coming out of them, but I know those studios have it in them.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't exist in that ecosystem like Ubisoft or Sony's first party or Nintendo's first party where they can really take risks. But everyone shuts studios down, and everyone's going to be mad for, you know, at publishers for, you know, shutting down a studio like, you know, Sony shut down 3 last year. You know, those kinds of things happen. So, you know,
I also think it's a little bit of a strange example, but like a publishing imprint like Chillingo on mobile, they publish indie mobile games. That's an
shout out to Levi Buchanan.
Shout out to Levi Buchanan. That's owned by EA.
Yeah,
like wholly owned by EA, and they publish tiny one-man little indie games on the App Store every single week. And when an indie developer is working with Chillingo, EA is who they're working with.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't really. I feel like people that are hating on a company like that aren't really seeing the big picture.
Yeah, that's far less of the, like, sort of David and Goliath, them versus gamers approach that I think everyone thought would sort of connected them with a few years ago. Like, that absolutely is much more Activision now, I'd say. I mean, Does Activision have an indie games label? Do they need one?
They do. They do some interesting stuff on like mobile and some smaller stuff. But broadly speaking, I would say that you know EA is a much friendlier company for that sort of thing.
After talking about it, I think personally I'm biggest fan of maybe Bethesda and 2K. Like they just seem to be making the games that I like the most.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
I would. This year, honestly, really, it would probably be Ubisoft, which is weird for me. Like, I really loved Rayman. I really loved Splinter Cell. Like,
Splinter Cell.
I was not a game I expected to connect with me, it was just like, damn, this game is awesome. I don't really play stealth games like that. I think they're sort of tedious, and the more actiony they get, the more first person shootery they get, and the less I get interested. Yeah. But it sort of hit this perfect right in the middle between a good action game and a good stealth game, and it just really connected with me. I'm excited for Watch Dogs. I'm sort of cautiously optimistic. I'm a little worried that it's going to be like my third or fourth big open world game this year, and I don't want to get too fatigued on that. But Assassin's Creed could be cool again. I'm with Colin, and that
I'm actually excited for a four. Yeah.
Yeah. I very much love all of the world building that goes around those things. And when I finally sit down with a controller, it's a different story. Yeah. But we'll see. I mean, yeah, Ubisoft right now is killing it.
Yep.
Justin and Colin, do you have favorite third-party publishers?
I feel the same as you guys. You know, really excited about Ubisoft. I know I keep harping on it. I don't want to sound like I'm not some crazy EA fanboy, but I just when I was
you don't sound like a crazy EA fanboy.
When I was doing research for this Game Scoop, I'm like, man, Burnout Paradise was dope. Like they've just done like a lot of really good stuff over the last several years. Yeah. But in terms of what's coming up, Ubisoft. You know, Rayman was incredible. Watch Dogs is going to be really good, I think. Splinter Cell, all the same stuff.
The last Need for Speed game they made was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like Hot Pursuit a lot.
Really? Yeah,
go ahead. Colin.
I like Hot Pursuit 2 a lot on PS2. Long time ago. I think of the ones we've discussed, I mean, I think Atlas speaks to me a lot in terms of Catherine and Dragon's Crown. They are one of the last adventurous Japanese publishers, and they fund cool games, and they have a great internal studio that makes good games too. So I think that's really positive for them.
I'm surprised you didn't say Insomniac.
Insomniac's a developer that you know they're with it. I love obviously Insomniac's games.
Is it traitors?
Yeah. No, I'd love for them to bring Resistance back and the Resistance team is working on Sunset Overdrive, so that's their best studio, that's their best internal team, and that bodes very well for that game. So I think Xbox One owners are going to have something cool there. Sure. And I agree with you. Ubisoft seems to just be coming on really hot right now, and I agree. Games like Rayman are so cool, and no one takes risks like that anymore. But when you see those games they just announced this week, they're just so different than another bro shooter or another Halo or another Killzone.
And I feel like they can make them work. Like.
Yeah, totally.
Thanks, guys. Stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop.
Konnichiwa, sluts! It's your boy, Japanese Marty! I'm bringing a little American flavor to TGS! Let's talk about Battlefield 4!
Cause a fucking international incident? I would love that.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Benjamin Hoover did.
Well, Hoover did!
Wait, Hoover did? Oh, Hoover did.
Yeah.
His name's not Hoover did.
Hoover did what Hoover damn can't.
Doesn't.
Okay.
You know what? I liked that there was, for a long time, just the Hoover vacuum, and that was as good
as it
gets.
That's what I thought. You guys went to Hoover Dam. I thought Hoover vacuum.
But now you got this fucking Dyson guy,
yeah,
and he's got all this no suction ideas, and I was fine when he was just vacuums, but now he's got that air blade in all the fucking airports, and it sucks.
What an asshole.
What if the heir to one married the heiress to the other? That's like a romantic comedy right there.
Hoover and Dyson?
Yeah.
Or that's like Capulets and
Montagues.
I'm glad you rescued me there. Because
One's grandfather invented the vacuum, but another perfected it. What happens when these families get together? Find out in the latest summer comedy, This Wedding Sucks.
That was so good.
That was pretty brilliant. I didn't know if you were going to be able to pull out the perfect movie title.
Something strong. Yeah.
I was going to say Sucking for Love.
Whoa, that's something else.
That's the porn knockoff version.
Yeah.
The panelists answering your emails today are myself, Damon Hatfield, Justin Davis,
Scoop,
Marty Sleva,
hello,
and Greg Miller.
Scoop!
Now, Benjamin Hoover asks, hey guys, y'all posted a video a few months ago about which console you would get if you could only pick one. I was just curious, with the PS Vita TV just announced, getting to see all these games at PAX and Gamescom, where do you stand now? PS4 or Xbox One. Sent from my iPad.
Oh, I guess we know where you stand, huh? Fucking iPhone 5C motherfucker over here.
Wow.
Yeah, that got
I'm sticking. I'm still PS4. The PS Vita TV did not persuade me one way or the other.
I do think that's cool, but that doesn't really have anything to do with
PS4. I didn't understand the relevance. So.
Yeah, it's not
that was more the reference
PS4.
I was making.
Yeah, sure.
Now, this is just a... what's it?
Informal straw poll.
Yeah.
Haphazard.
Straw poll, yeah. If I could only get one, I would get the PS4, but I'll eventually get both.
Right now I have the PS4 pre-ordered and not the Xbox One. For me, even though like $100 on its own isn't that much, my brain like does something changes when it goes from 400 to 500. Like 500 seems like so much, and then you get a game or two, and then you're up to 600, 650, whereas 400 seems like an amount easier for me to swallow.
Gotcha.
Yeah, PS4 here as well. Honestly, though, I'm not excited for Killzone. I'm not excited for Infamous.
Me too.
It's just those
indie
games.
You're not excited for Infamous. That's crazy.
It's the indie games that I'm excited for.
I agree.
That's fine. DC Universe Online, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I don't feel like if someone...
Jonathan Blow is DC Universe Online.
If someone were, like, really full court press me, I don't know that I could, like, justify the PS4 purchase because I don't really like their exclusive lineup that much, but... You know, the cost, and I think the console looks nicer, and I need a new Blu-ray player anyway, and, you know, there's other stuff.
Interface looks good.
Yeah. But that being said, I'll be getting an Xbox One when Titanfall comes out.
Exactly.
And I want to play Below. Exactly.
I did this video yesterday about it, and I had to get in there and try to stomp out a flame war, because I wasn't trolling. I have them both pre-ordered, but I am wavering on if I need my Xbox One.
Sure.
And my argument now, and I'm going to buy it still, is just the fact that, why not? By the time Titanfall comes out, there won't have been a price drop, I don't think. And I'm sure I want to play Dead Rising 3 at the moment. But if Dead Rising 3 comes out and it's a 6.5, I'm going to feel like an ass having
that's
this.
The situation.
But Peggle 2.
Oh, that's true. You do got that Peggle 2 timed exclusive. Yeah.
I would love to play Peggle 2. I don't want to play $500
But I'm going to spend $500 on it anyway, is keep justifying this.
Sure, eventually.
Apparently, I'll be one of three people in the office with an Xbox One, so I'll be all over the videos and the articles.
You make a great point, because like I know that I'm going to want an Xbox One. Like the moment some game comes out, I'm like, I can't not play this game, I'm going to get one, and there won't have been a price drop by then, so why not get one day one and be part of the conversation?
Sure. Exactly. That's what I'm saying, because with the PlayStation 3 and the Wii U, right, like I'm like, I'm going to buy those systems one day for a game, but I can hold out to a price drop until I think it's reasonable. I'm not even like – I don't even think like $500 is unreasonable for the console.
Sure.
It's just that now you're looking down the barrel of $1,000 in a two-week period.
Well, at this point,
they
for
rolled
me,
up the $1,000 into like a tube and you're looking
down. Look at it.
It's a – for me, it's a moo point.
A moo point.
Moo point. It's one of those cow points.
Because if I decided I wanted an Xbox One, it's too late. Like, there's none left.
Yeah, that's true.
You'll be able to get one by Christmas. You'll be able to walk into a store in December and buy out a system. Mm. An Xbox One, honestly, I like the idea of Kinect, but I can't use Kinect in my bedroom. I have a small bedroom in San Francisco. There's no Kinect room in there.
But so you
I had
to.
When I reviewed Gunstringer, I had to review it in my closet. So continually all day I was coming out of the closet.
I know Kinect 2.0 is supposed to be a big improvement, but like, I've had a Kinect for a long time. I never used it. So when I went home to see my family last weekend, I took the Kinect home because they have five kids. Mm-hmm. Dude, setting up that thing and trying to get it to work was such a giant hassle.
Yeah.
Like it did not work.
Yeah.
It's junk. The Kinect 1.0 is total junk.
IGN.com.
No. Damon Hatfield.
.org.
This next email is signed Alexander Meadows. But the from is from Parker Meadows.
Get
it together, Parker Alexander.
People. I don't know who to believe.
I don't even want to hear this question.
Wait, is this the Parker?
There's two people living inside me.
Oh, God. It's like the world's...
Please send help. I've been able to take over the body for 15 minutes.
This is a brief glimpse into your psyche.
He's only got control of his hands and his like head's thrashing around and they fight it out. Foaming at the mouth, just screaming.
It's not possible that they're brothers or it's his dad's email account.
Or that he's just Parker but goes by Alexander.
His girlfriend's like backed away with a knife, not sure who's about to come out.
The priest is in there like throwing holy water.
I love Game Scoop.
Anyway, Park Xander says, I realize most consoles don't have a good lineup at launch, but usually after a year or so, the better games seem to come up. Do you think next gen has a good lineup, or is it lacking? It seems to me it lacks original content. Most of the games coming out are continuations on existing franchises.
So is the launch lineup for next gen lacking?
His question, is it a good lineup or is it lacking?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I would say it's lacking. Yeah,
yeah, it's an average launch lineup, right? You're like, oh, Killzone, cool, I'll play that, I guess.
I mean, what it does have is it has, I think, strong third-party support, right, especially from Ubisoft.
Ubisoft is killing it.
I mean, regardless of what you buy this fall, like Watch Dogs and AC4 are probably going to be two of the three best games.
So those are the two games that I'm planning on getting with my next gen console. But you don't need a next gen console.
Yeah, they're
but you need a next gen console to play them as the way we've been playing them.
Yeah,
and see, my question is how I don't think there'll be that big of a gap between Assassin's Creed PS3, PS4, or vice versa. But I think Watch Dogs right?
Yeah, they don't know what current gen.
Watch Dogs current gen, it can't. Yeah.
Like
work.
We know Black Flag's not going to look any worse on a 360 than AC3 did. And AC3 looked great. So
true.
Park Xander has a follow-up question.
Ooh.
Do you think there is a big jump in how next-gen looks next to current-gen in comparison to how current-gen looks next to previous-gen?
Nope.
You know what you're saying?
Yeah. PS2's jump to PS3 was like, oh my god, look at how good Uncharted looks.
That's because you're going from SD to HD.
Right.
But kind of not even really at launch. Like games like Perfect Dark Zero and some stuff like that, these games weren't like incredibly impressive.
It wasn't until like Graw and Fight Night and...
Uncharted for PS3. But
Uncharted for PS3.
That was super late, too.
Oblivion, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you figure what you're
this
really
This one's really bad. This one's not good.
No. Do we have to call the person out, though, for it?
No, I'm just saying that one's bad.
No, I'm well aware. No, I think, I think when you look at Assassin's Creed side by side, like, you're going to be like, oh, man, that one's really sharp, and it's cool they're using the touchpad this way, but I don't think it's going to be like, oh, PU.
But it's also kind of like, so there's been really, really high-end PCs for years that already looked better than consoles. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are playing games on mobile that then, you know, Angry Birds gets ported to consoles, and, you know, Infinity Blade looks great. So it's like those lines of, like, those big like graphical gaps just like don't exist anymore. Like the different ways that people play games.
Would you say those are blurred lines?
Everybody get up.
Oh, nobody wants it.
This is Andrew.
Gold Farm. I need a girl.
Hey guys, how much BioShock Infinite garbage is too much garbage in your house?
Out of the three console.
Which such a Gold Farm typo. Classic Gold Farm.
Which would you think will get the most shovelware this coming gen?
I didn't even hear that. I was too busy.
I mean, shovelware.
Which of the three consoles is going to have shovelware?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I think shovelware is more of an iOS thing these days.
Yeah.
It's traditionally been, like, the Wii was a shovelware console, right?
But I don't think, like, the Wii U install base is so small, like, nobody's going to bother making
I just can't even imagine, like, it's so expensive to make console games and yada yada that I don't even see a shovelware. Yeah, I mean, I see it on mobile.
And it's, like, to me, Xbox One and PS4 are going to have 85% of the same games.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And you figured, if anything's going to be shovelware-y, it'll be, the fact you'd see more iOS stuff coming over to PlayStation. That, you know, they're trying to make it so easy to develop for and all these other things. If they actually keep it at a $99 price point to get in on being a developer, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's making, Marty's completely right, nobody's making Imagine Babies and only putting it on the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be on everything.
Also, why aren't we talking about Ouya?
Ouya!
Whoa, a tumbleweed came through.
Yeah.
Like coyote in the corner.
I didn't even know what it was. I already saved over those files. I forgot what the Ouya was.
Nobody's talking about the Ouya. This is Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style. Oh. One of our favorites.
Mm-hmm. He says, with the upcoming release of GTA Online, it sounds like Rockstar is paving the way for a next-gen GTA MMO. What do you guys think of a future GTA MMO, and what do you think the chances are that we will see one on next-gen consoles?
I think they're doubling down on this online business.
Yeah, online is kind of their future plan, right?
Yeah, they put
online's like a platform.
We put up this thing, right? Yeah, that they were talking about it like a platform, mm-hmm. and hinting that everything we've done so far. So you imagine that eventually they're going to be like huge expansion a year from now. Liberty City is now there. Go play in Liberty City.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, and I'd be willing in terms of next-gen. If a year from now, either we don't have next-gen GTA 5 or it hasn't been announced, like, I would be shocked. I'd be shocked if by February or March they haven't announced that there's an Xbox One and a PS4 version of GTA 5.
Yeah, no, and there is going to be a PC. So, like, there's no PC version of GTA 5. They're not announcing it. They're not making it, yada, yada.
Literally
every single Grand Theft Auto, we're not making it for PC. We're not making it for PC. Then a year later it comes out.
Wasn't that Red
PC.
Dead 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, Red Dead never came to PC, did it?
I just said, yeah, I disagreed with you. I don't even know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I know for sure it happened with GTA.
Yeah.
So Max
Payne,
it's
maybe? Why? There's been, I thought there was something outside
Max
of GTA.
Max Payne?
You're thinking of Rockstar Table Star Tennis. This is...
Of course. Here's my
devil's advocate argument.
Here it comes.
I don't think they're making a GTA MMO. I want to be super clear. I don't think that's happening. But if they were to do it, the reasoning might be... So they get a giant spike of like hundreds of millions of dollars once every 5 years.
Right.
Like, how does that work from like a business? Like, we're going to make this thing forever and hope that people still care about GTA 5 years from now. Like, that doesn't work. It's impossible to run a business that way. Like,
well, that's why the online could work that way.
I mean, they don't. Do you pay for it?
It comes with GTA 5.
Yeah.
It just comes with GTA 5. But
I'm going to be microtransactions. There will be a client and there will be microtransactions. I guarantee.
I think so.
Yeah, that's how it's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I do think that they absolutely need to figure out a way to like. GTA 4 continues to also be one of the most played games.
Mm-hmm.
10 or 5 years after release, that's still one of the top tits in the top 10 Xbox games all the time. And they don't really extract any revenue from those people at all. Like, they just get to play for free. So they need to figure out a way to make a little bit of money off those people.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to see
Rockstar strapped for cash.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason they're not is because those games sell so extremely ridiculously well. Mm-hmm. Like, the moment that one only sells 9 million copies instead of 15, like, they're in big trouble.
On Tuesday, I think I'm just going to come in the office, grab my coffee, and go home and play.
Yeah.
No, don't. No one expect anything to get done. Yeah.
Our final email today comes from Jason Jackson.
Jason Jackson!
That sounds like a superhero name.
Jackson. Look how he spells his name.
Jackson Jason?
That's kind of neat.
How does he spell it? Explain it. Does he draw the Jack, like when you play Jacks? Does he play? You draw a Jack?
J-A-I-S-Y-N.
Okay.
Nope. S-Y-N.
Jason! With a weird spelling!
Jason!
He says, I've been a scooper for the last year. I look forward to your guys' podcasts every week. My question for Scooby and the gang is this.
Scooby!
Scooby and the gang!
Read the question, Scooby! You fucking dog!
Scoobs!
Give me a Scooby snack.
Let me get you a can of dog food, you fucking monster!
Oh, Jesus!
As I talked to Pertilla.
Side note, Jesse looks exactly like Velma. We just talked about that. Jesse, the new...
She looks like Velma. Oh, Velma. I thought you said Elmo.
I was like, that's really offensive.
No, I can see the Velma thing. Yeah, totally.
The question is this. If you could take a game and add your own twist on it, whether gameplay-wise or narratively, what game would it be and how would you change it?
Oh, my God.
So I've said this before.
Oh.
Wow, we did not expect that echo.
Take the Fallout formula, set it in feudal Japan. You're a wandering...
Ronin?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
That's my game.
Scooby has spoken!
So I have two games, both of which I've pitched to people. So I got drunk once and pitched Sean Vanneman from Telltale on a Scooby-Doo adventure game that Telltale would make.
Speaking of,
so this is good timing. So just imagine, if you will, the Scooby-Doo adventure game.
Okay.
So each episode, each monthly installment is like an episode of Scooby-Doo. That sounds really good.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling us that it sounds, my idea is great.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah. I think it'd be great. Also, do you guys remember Jet Force Gemini?
Yes.
Yeah.
Game is great.
Give that to FromSoft, who makes Dark Souls. And I want a hardcore, you like crash land on this planet filled with like horrible bugs, and the game just punishes the fuck out of you the entire time.
Nice.
Yeah, I just made two games.
There you go.
Yeah.
I have a Superman idea I've been working on a long time that would make it not terrible, but I'm going to write about it one day.
Rocksteady making it?
No. We also need another Patapon.
Oh, I would love another Patapon.
They released a Patapon on the App Store.
That's not the question.
I saw that. I know.
It's only in Chinese.
Wait, so you haven't actually given us an idea?
I know. He's being coy.
That's all I'm gonna do.
But you like games, don't you?
Is this one of those secret things? Right. Is this one of the secret things you're doing?
Yeah, one of my secret things.
You're now making games.
this
whole YouTube thing's actually a game. It's an ARG.
I got nothing good.
Justin, you were just telling us about how you mock up games.
Yeah, but I like to play that close to the chest. I guess I can say. It doesn't exactly answer the question. A game that I personally would like to play would be a tower defense MMO game where multiple people would work together to like you place towers like on a grid and then you have to like share, like you won't have enough to beat it on your own, so you would need to work together with friends.
You should look into Ubisoft's upcoming End War Online.
Yeah, it's a little bit
like, you're it's not the exact same thing, but
I always want a zombie MMO too, and I know they kind of exist, but I mean like build a camp and have your own community and do all this
like
other stuff.
State of Decay MMO.
Yeah, exactly.
Marty's right, though, that so we were talking, we were having some drinks the other night, and we talked about how we all need to have a creative outlet outside of work. Like, Damon makes music, and Marty, you write fiction, and a lot of people at IGN write fiction. And
Greg stabs homeless people.
Yeah. You run the bum fights.
Yeah, I do run the bum fights.
And I make, like, fake game design documents. Like, I design a game, and then I come up with all the problems. I'm like, here's why this wouldn't work. Like, I try to poke holes in my own game, like, all the answers, questions I don't have answers to. And then I just try to answer them. I'd be like, well, you could solve this problem this way and this problem this way. And then I make these big, long, elaborate docs, and they just sit in Google Docs. And then I come into work. Like, is that weird? I think it's kind of weird.
No, that's cool. I like that.
It's not weird.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
But it's not like what's weird to me, what's weird about my behavior is that I don't really make the game or even have that much desire to make the game. It's just like a thing that I do for fun.
You know what I can't believe hasn't happened? Mario Defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would probably be more like they'd pick a franchise like, you know, I don't know, Pikmin or something, right?
I don't know. I can just see it with Mario characters.
You put Mario on it.
The Goombas. Sure. The Goombas are marching towards Princess Castle. You gotta build your Piranha Plant towers to feed them up. Yeah. Come on, Nintendo.
I mean, Nintendo, like, if Nintendo ever took that leap and started, you know, making games for iOS, like, that would absolutely be one of the first.
For sure.
And then they would have a runner that's like, not a runner, but like a, they would turn Mario into Rayman Jungle Run.
See, this is what, like... Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but Mario or Nintendo made an auto runner called Yoshi's Touch and Go on the DS, and because it was on their own hardware and because it was on a cart, they could sell it for $35. They don't need to sell it for 99 cents on the App Store. Like, you know, I don't know. It's tough. They're in a tough spot.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Greg. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.